First of all, it's my favorite topic ever, colors. But I wanted to, I didn't want it just to be about colors. I wanted to try to connect it somehow, at least, to the time. So the first source is from Mamloy's, in a list of Nisim that he has that happened at Yam Suf. So number 7 in his list, he says, Hanes HaShvi Haya, Shenechleku HaMayim Liyod Be'chalakim Kmo Kavishim Gedolim L'chol Shevet Haya Derech Miuchad. So it's like classic kind of midrash that we probably all heard when we were younger, that the Yam Suf split into 12 different paths, not that it was just one with dry land, but like a separate one for each Shevet. So another connection to the pasuk, little gematria, and he says the purpose for this nes was so that it should be nice and benachat, and one shouldn't be like on top of the other, presumably like one shevet. But if you think about it, it's a little bit weird, because if like the sea, the size of the Yam Suf didn't change, just the size of the passageway, or the number of passageway changed, which means that probably each passageway was smaller. And if they were different for each shevet, then like the, some shvatim were bigger than others, we know from like later countings in the Chumash, but maybe the smaller shvatim had more space, but like the bigger shvatim were just as crowded. Like, what does that mean? That they shouldn't be on top of each other, like it should be menachat, and like what is that really about? So I kind of thought that was like an interesting connection with the Avnei HaChoshen, because it says in Shmos Kafchat source 2, when it's talking about the different big day kahuna and tetzava, umileta bo miluat even arba'a turim, even tor odem pitza ubareket hatorah echad vator sheni no fech sapir v'yalom vator shlishi leshem shpava achlama vator vi tarshish shoham yashve mishubatim zahavi b'miluatam. So it lists the different stones, the names, and then it says that they were like according to the names of the Shvatim. There were 12 of them, like parallel to the Shvatim. So what the rest of the Shir is mostly about is the uniqueness of each stone and how what the connection is to the Shevet that it represented. So it kind of, these two passages, I guess, sort of remind me of each other a little bit, because if there's something unique about each Shevet, then maybe that has something to do with the fact that Hashem made 12 different passageways in the Yom Sefer, that the Midrash says that. And it kind of just brought the message home, at least to me. A lot of this Shir, by the way, is kind of a little bit speculative, like my own ideas about things, to take it or leave it. But maybe an idea about like the 12 passageways is that each Shevet has their own derech and their own journey to go on. And even at Yom Suf, when like we're becoming one entity and we're unifying as a nation at like the birth of, you know, like Pesach's coming up, and like we're thinking about like the Jewish people as one entity, at the same time it could be that the Midrash is telling us that in order to really accomplish that, we have to remember that each group or each person has, there's different Midrash that says actually a different path for each person, but this time I'm focusing on the Shvatim because of the Choshen, but that at the time when we're talking about becoming one nation, we also have to remember that each person, each Shevet, has its own like niche in that picture, and we can't be a complete nation unless everyone really fulfills their potential and finds that niche of theirs and goes in their path. So maybe that's what it means when it says that the purpose was sheyu benachat v'lo echad ha'sheni, that not that it wouldn't be crowded, okay, whether it's crowded or not, it might stay the same, but that no one's overstepping their boundaries. Everyone's staying in their niche. No one's saying, I have to be like Shevet Levi. I'm not Shevet Levi. I can go on my path. They can go on their path. Everyone sees clearly that people might have different ways, and no one's going to feel like, you know, it's too crowded, or like people are kind of rubbing up against each other when there's no need for that. Everyone can really sort of go the way that's right for them. So then that as like a segue into the Choshen thing. It's important to remember like what the point of the Choshen was, and this is just one example of it. From Shmot Rabbah in source 3, it says, "Be'ezes schut haya Aaron nechnas lebeit kodesh kadashim." How did Aaron have the schut, like what gave him the right or the merit to go into the holiest place in kodesh kadashim? A little while, it says different ideas. A little down the line in the Medrash, it says, "Rav Yitzchak Omer zechut hashvatim ha'itah nechneset imo." Shneimar ve'zeh hadavar asher ta'aseh lahem. Minyan zeh against the same gematria, the word zeh yud bet. Ve'eluhin yud bet avanim shehayu nitunot ali bosha aron v'aleim shemot hashvatim. So again, we have the connection with 12, and specifically the schus of the shvatim came in the form of the choshen, of the stones that Aaron was wearing when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's sort of him having something that recalls the schuyot of the shvatim on him when he came in, sort of brought in their schut with him to help gain atonement for Klal Yisrael. So it's also perspective to keep in mind for the rest of this year with the shvatim, that whatever the stones were supposed to remind of, it was supposed to be probably, at least according to the Medrash, supposed to be something positive and something to learn from. And then hopefully we can draw our own whatever personal messages for it afterwards. I didn't include all 12 shvatim in here because it's long. But also, I'm a little biased because I wanted to focus on the colors. And sometimes when the Mepharshim talk about like why this stone for this shevet, they're talking about different aspects of the stones. Like what's the geological nature of the stones? They're used to talk about like alchemy. What's that nature of the stone? Or maybe it's in the name of a pun that relates to the shevet. So I kind of just picked and chose which ones I wanted. and I just chose some that I thought sort of really illustrate the nature of colors and connections and the personalities of the shvatim and midot of the shvatim through the colors. And the first is Reuven, which somehow I found a lot more material on Reuven than the other ones. I don't know why, if there's just more written or like, anyway. So Reuven Bachaye writes a lot about the Avnei HaChoshen. Source 4, he starts with Reuven Umash Natan Evan Odem LeRuven Al Shem She'edimu Panav Bechet Bilha Keshabil Bel Yitzu'e Aviv Vehoda Velo Vosh Ve'Evan Hazot Nikra Reuven. So Odem, which is the first of the stones, basically everybody agrees that was represented Reuven, and also common consensus has it that Odem, it's pretty obvious what color it was. Some of the stones are like not clear, and people talk about, well, is it this stone or is it that stone, and there's a bit of machloket, but for this one people know that it's a red stone because it's called Odem, which is like the word Adom. And the allusion that Rabbeinu Bachaye says the red stone is supposed to remind of is that Reuven's face reddened regarding the chait with Bilha when he mixed around his father's beds, the pshat that he slept with Bilha, or the gemara that that he just mixed around the beds after Rachel died. But apparently, according to Rabbeinu Bachaye, he did shuva for that, and he admitted it without shame. He, you know, clearly came forward and admitted his sin and was appropriately embarrassed because of it. And then just an interesting point, he says the stone is called Reuven, which sounds kind of like Reuven. No, I think that was kind of cool. It doesn't come up with other shvatim, but so some people say it's a ruby or maybe a different red stone. But so that's one illusion, possibly, that it's supposed to make us think of the schus of his tshuva for that sin.
I see a question. Were they set up in the order of the encampment, or just in the order of...
That's part of the machloket, actually. Oh, okay. Some people say it was in the order of the birth, like maybe first all of... I don't think I mentioned that, actually. Some people say it was in the order of birth, first all of Leah's children, and then the order of birth of the Shvachos, and then the order of birth of Rachel's children. There are those who say that it was in order of encampment, and some kind of mix around the Shvachos' kids, mm-hmm. whatever. It's pretty clear that the first three, most people agree, Odem, Pitta, Bereket, are Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and basically people agree that the last two, Shoham and Yash, well, actually Shoham, there's a disagreement about Shoham, but Yashpe, people agree, is Binyamin, mm-hmm. but in between, time changes. So that's one opinion, Reuven. And the source 5, we see that what he did is in from Vayechi, where Yaakov criticizes him for that sin. And it's just interesting to note, I didn't bring the bracha from Vayechi for each shevet, but basically a lot of people say that the bracha that Yaakov gave them, that is highlighting their like prominent midah. And so if we look in Vayechi, that might help bring out what their midah were, and sometimes people quote it in my sources, and otherwise you could look it up and see, you know, connections. But at least for Reuven, he says, one of the things he said is, Pachas kamayim al totar ki alita mishkavei avicha az chila al tayitzu alav. That Reuven is pachas kamayim, he's kind of like hasteful or what's the word I'm trying to think of? Impulsive, like water, that he kind of just comes forth, and he's saying that's a negative thing, don't do that too much, because you came upon your father's bed and you desecrated it, and that's his criticism of the that chait. And we're going to come back to that after the other sources also. The Al-Sheikh says something different though. In source 6, he says, Aleph Shal Ruvain, the first stone was Ruvain's, Shnemar Bo, Laman Hitzilo Tov Miadam. He says the reason that it's for Ruvain is he's bringing a pasuk from the selling of Yosef, when Ruvain suggested, well, in his mind anyway, he had the intention, Laman Hitzilo Tov Miadam, he wanted to save Yosef from his brothers, Shamru L'chuvan Argeu, because they were saying they wanted to kill him. Al-Kein Nechtam B'Adam, Aleph Dal Mem Remez L'Admimut Hadam V'Nechtav Chaser Vav L'Rmoz Aldam HaAdam. So there's like a pun here. He's saying that the word Odem or Adam has the word Dam in it, so it like indicates that he was trying to save him from bloodshed. And not only that, but Odem is written without a Vav. You could write it with a Vav or without, and without a Vav you could read it as Adam. So it also shows that he had like this value of human life, that he wanted to try to save Yosef. So it's another merit of his. And like red reminds of the blood that might have been shed, but he was trying to save. Abarbanel doesn't talk about the color, but he quotes somebody unnamed who does in source 7. Ki mehem amru she ha'odem pidda uvareket hayu k'neged Ruvain Shimon Levi v'shaya ha'odem hi anikret garanada bil'az ha'dzomeh l'rimon she gargrav adumim. It's red like a pomegranate seeds. V'haya k'neged Ruvain b'chor Yisrael. Which is the pasuk that comes before what I brought in verse 5 in the bracha of Reuven, where Yaakov says he's like my strength and the first of my power. Here's his firstborn son. And apparently this person that Abarbanel is quoting is sort of making some kind of connection between like the strong and the forthcoming and power and the color red. There's some kind of connection there also. Even there are studies that like if a person wears like a red tie or something red to like an interview, that it shows that they're like confidence and power, like a their connection to that also. But the Me'ashiloch in source 8 has a completely different association with the color red. And it also, just like the Barbanel's person he's quoting, the Me'ashiloch also, he's not relating it to a specific incident in Ruvain's life, like Rabbeinu Bachai or the Al-Sheikh, but he's just relating it in general as a color association. He says, Odem hu neged shevet Ruvain, ki odem hu gavun simcha. Ruvain nikra al shem Ruia or Ruia ki b'chol inyanav v'dvarav ro'et tamid nechachor Hashem. Hashem yibrach me'irinav u'mizeh ba'godol ha'simcha l'adam. K'mo shekatuv me'irinayim nismach liv. So he says red is a happy color, and more than an association with Ruvain as a personality, it's more about what Ruvain represents, because his name is like seeing Ruvain Ruia, and you know, seeing is believing, whatever, like seeing is being happy if you see the right thing. That Ruvain teaches us that we should feel like we always see Hashem in front of us, and that's going to bring us simcha. And that's why Ruvain got a red simcha colored stone. So just looking at these different ideas, I was kind of wondering if maybe there's a common thread that goes through them, especially because we know from other places like the Brachos of Yaakov and Vayechi, that there are prominent midot that the Shvatim either symbolize or lived in their lives, that we can learn from them. And also it's like a whole other Torah and Shir where there's Shir and parallels to the zodiacs and the month of the year and the midot of the Shevet that's parallel to that month, and it's like a whole thing. So that's not this Shir, but that kind of made me think that maybe whatever sources I see about these Shvatim and the stones, like maybe there is a commonality between them. So going back to Bereishis Mem Ten Vayechi, that possibly is that what his midah could be, Pachas Kamayim. But does it have to be negative, like impulsiveness? That always has like a negative connotation. So maybe what the Barbanel is quoting, Kochi Bereishit Oni, of that like power and strength, that it's the same midah, like that passion, that energy is a characteristic that somebody could have, and they could take it in different directions. So maybe, if you look at the examples that we had, maybe those are situations where Ruvain either was using or wasn't using that trait, and it's sort of like part of his growth period as a person, using his traits for good or not so much for good. Even if you look at the sin behind, like number 4, right? Ruvain Bachai said it was doing tshuva for what he did with Bilhah. Maybe if you think about it, the sin itself was kind of like an impulsive sin. Like what son of Yaakov Avinu is going to just go, like, if he was thinking straight, if his, you know, he was thinking in his right mind, like, he would go mess around with his father's beds, with his father's pilegesh, like, what is that? Like, it sounds like a pretty impulsive thing, and that's exactly how Yaakov characterized it in Vayechi, when he's specifically referring to that. But, this chut, but the zechut that's being alluded to in the choshen is the tshuva for that. And even if he used his impulsiveness negatively in the sin, now apparently he did a tshuva for that. And what kind of tshuva? Just a lashon. Al shem she'edimu panav b'chit. What does that mean that a person's face gets red? It means that they blush. The blood goes to their face. It's kind of like an energy-driven tshuva, almost. Maybe not so much literally, like every time a person blushes, they like jump out of their chair, and not so much. But like the picture that you're getting, the tone of it, is kind of like that same energy and that same passion. And to show us that even if he used his characteristic originally in a negative way, he did tshuva with it also, and that was positive. And so too, with what the Alshul says, where he says that he saved Yosef, there's like a negative part and a positive part, because he didn't really save Yosef. Like, if he really wanted to use his midah of like passionate energy properly, he would have like pushed the brothers to really save him, and he would have done more and like really put himself out there to save Yosef, but he didn't. He just had an intention. So like his mind was here, it was the opposite. Well, I don't know if it's really the opposite, whatever. Like his mind was in the right place, but, and he had the value of human life, of like blood, of like, you know, gesunta, like let's keep Yosef in there. But he didn't really use it. But again, it's something that tells us about his midah, and somehow the Ashach is finding a schus in there, in just the fact that he wanted to value it. And that's enough of a schus that should be on the choshen for Klal Yisrael. And source 9 is sort of just an external source from this book. It's called Color, the Secret Influence. It's like all different aspects of color in different realms. So this section is from a section on psychology and color, where it says, most people believe that red is exciting while blue is calming, but is this true? It's like one of those things that's just kind of out there as a general belief, maybe. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but some people think that. Many studies have been run in an attempt to answer this question. Some have studied this physiological responses such as heart rate, blood pressure, or galvanic skin response. Others have concentrated on more subjective psychological responses, and this particular guy, Humphrey, postulates that red may carry unique signal qualities. Properties. What does that mean, signal properties? He notes that red is the most common color signal in nature, arising from the fact that red contrasts well with both green foliage and the blue sky, but also because it is the color of blood, it is easily accessible by animals. So like even in nature, like red comes up, like certain animals, certain parts of their body are red, or comes in different colors, and red is like a prominent color for the purpose of changing their coloration. But problems arise from the ambiguity of its signal, that just like it's a midah that could go in different directions, so also in nature you find it in different areas, and it could be a sign for different things. It's always a signal. It's always like a red, like even the expression, you know, like a red sign, a red flag, a red, it's like that's what it means. It's like an action kind of thing, but it could be used for different things. It can signal either approach through sexual display or edible food, or it can signal avoidance through aggressive behavior or warning of a poisonous substance. Like you find out there, like when food is ripe to eat, a lot of foods turn red, or definitely not when they're not ripe, they're not red yet, you know, like berries and fruits and things, or certain poisonous animals or plants could come in red. And in general, according to Humphrey, the response to red is a reflexive one, serving the purpose of preparing one to take some form of action that is defined by the context. So red itself could be a signal, a red flag, and also the living creature has an instinctual like response and reaction to seeing red, which is an active, like action-ready response. Just as a disclaimer, all the things, I'm going to say a couple other things about colors, there have been a lot of studies on colors, and a lot of them are not so generally applicable. Like, you know, there have been studies that, well, if, you know, if the person's in a red room or whatever, does it always change their behavior? Well, no, there are a lot of factors that go into that, so you can't say, like, too many generalizations, but the fact that there are these indications in nature and with people sort of just show us that this midah is very prominently represented and appropriately by red. So it just makes sense, like the energy, the blood, you know, and all these things about Reuven, it all kind of fits together, as the Odin being the symbol for him. So to move on, the next shavit I wanted to do was Yehuda. I'm going to go to 11, actually. I just did it this way for the page, so it would fit well. Source 11, Rabbeinu Bachai says, Yehuda hayam befutach al nofech. So if you go back to source 2, there was Odem pit de barakat, right? Reuven Shimon Levi, and he says the fourth one, nofech, is Yehuda. Ve'aeven yirukak karti. It's a green, like a leek green color. V'hu mimin parashma kamo shehiz karti. V'natnal Yehuda al shem shehorik panav b'maset tamar. V'nit gaber al yitzro v'hoda v'lo vosh. So one scenario that it brings to mind, why is green stone for Yehuda? Because Yehuda's face turned green when he finally admitted he was like embarrassed. But it's kind of ironic. It's like horik really means like his face like turned green, like paled. But in the sense of embarrassment over what happened with Tamar at the time when he finally was able to overcome his Yetzer Hara and admit what he did wrong. And it's kind of ironic, something to think about, that it's the same lashon actually as we just said about Reuven with red. Like, Reuven was embarrassed and his face turned red, but Yehuda was embarrassed and his face turned green. Like, the blood comes to the face, the blood drains from the face. Like, what's the difference there? And so that's one scenario that it reminds us of, and that's a schus that he finally admitted it and before Tamar was killed. V'horiku panav gamkein al shechashar aviv al Yosef, hu shekatuv chaya ra'a achal tahan. U'kishaba l'varech abanav amalei, mitaref b'ni alit, az nesu panav zachim u'mevu hakim k'nofech hazeh, shezivav mavhik. So the other situation that it might bring to mind is he was afraid that his father suspected him in being involved in selling Yosef. And there's a hint in the pasuk, chaya ra'a, maybe chaya refers to Yehuda, and according to Rabbeinu Bachaye, Yehuda was nervous that his father, when he said that, was really suspecting him as being involved, so his face like paled, that he didn't want that. But on the flip side, afterwards, when everything got cleared up, he, you know, was in the limelight, I don't know, is it green also? He, you know, his face shone of purity, and like just like the stone shines beautifully. So we have two, just like Reuven, we had two life stories that it alluded to. Here we have two stories in Yehuda's life that the green might allude to. But Bamidbar Rabba does not think that Nofech was green. He says that it's blue. I copied from the Midrash says, actually, because it includes a lot from this parish on the Midrash called Tiferet Zion, which I couldn't find anywhere else, just in the Midrash says. So it comes up afterwards also. Basically, Bamidbar Rabba says, why in Bamidbar? Bamidbar has, it says that each Shevet also had a degel, had a flag. And according to the Midrash, the color of the flag was the same as the color of its stone in the Choshen. So according to this, it was blue. The flag was blue and the stone was blue. Why? So this Perish Teferet Zion says, both the color and the emblem proclaimed the tribe's royal status. The color blue is associated with the heavenly throne of glory, and Yehuda was the earthly representative of Hashem's majesty. And then with the lion that was on the flag, the picture of the lion portrayed Yaakov's last blessing, in which he compared Yehuda to be a lion, the king of beasts. Again, this royal imagery, where blue is, according to Chazal, kings wore blue, and also in terms of Hashem's kingship, the Gemara says that why is there blue in tzitzis? It's reminded of the sea, it's reminded of the sky, to remind you of Hashem's throne of glory. So it represents, it's human, blue sort of is a symbol here for human kingship, which is supposed to hark back to really godly kingship. And that's what Yehuda's role was. His children got the malchus, and Jewish kings were supposed to be a reflection of Hashem's kingship. So what's the story with Yehuda? What are we supposed to get from this? So already indicated, again, from Yaakov's blessing, his bracha, when compares to a lion, and we'll first talk about the malchus, and really, like, leadership is Yehuda's big, his big midah. So again, it's kind of interesting, these two scenarios that Rabbeinu Bachaye brings seems to be the development of that midah. Like, was he taking a stand to be the person who's going to be the leader and strong and come up front, or not? With Tamar, originally, again, looking back to why was he doing tshuva, what did he do in the first place? Originally, he could have given his son, his youngest son, to Tamar, according to Yibum, and, you know, his first two sons, as the story goes, his first son married Tamar, he died. His second son he gave, according to Yibum, he also died. And the right thing to do would have been to give his third and last son, and that would have been kind of like a strong leadership thing to do, to overcome his personal, you know, qualms in order to do what's right. But he didn't. So then finally, later on, and even at first, when Tamar got pregnant, at first he still didn't step up to the plate and, you know, speak up until eventually he kind of had to because Tamar had his things. So that was like almost a forced leadership, you might say. Like he had to admit himself and like say something in public, which is embarrassing, but that, you know, he had to do that. And then in the second situation, he really did take a leadership role with Yosef. He's the one who did more to save Yosef. It could be that Reuven had this intention to save him, but like it wasn't really going to happen. Like the brothers were too overpowering, too many of them, you know, too determined to get rid of him. So Yehuda was like smart, and he was like, okay, I'm going to do something about this, but I know how they work. Let's just say we'll sell him. Like, let's do something, and that worked. And so here he really did take a stand against his brothers, and when he thought his father thought he was involved in it, that was like the ultimate, you know, like mar to his feeling of leadership. Like he really did that. It wasn't an energy tshuva, it was like a paling tshuva. Like, wait a sec, this is what I worked hard for. Like, I'm not excited about feeling bad about this. This is not what I really meant to do. So then later, when everything was cleared up, he shone like the stone. And that's really his mida of leadership coming out, which of course is seen in Malchus here with the Midrash and Tiferes Tzion.
Are there other sources that talk about that Yehuda was really like more innocent?
In terms of which story?
In terms of Yosef's story?
More innocent. Well, it's clear from the pasuk that he suggested, meaning, are you saying you would take the pasuk that he wanted to sell him as a negative thing?
Yeah, I guess my thought is that, well, if for Reuven it says Laman
to steal, in contrast, it seems worse.
Yeah, it seems like, oh, well, if he really had a positive intention, maybe there would have been a little parenthesis next to him as well.
Interesting. But what actually happened in the pshat, meaning I'm looking more at pshat, where it, like, Reuven actually did nothing, and Yehuda actually did something, which made things better than they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also people do like studies between like Reuven and Yehuda, comes that parsha, and like say like, well, who was the real leader, and what was, you know. So you could look at that as a negative, you know, maybe he was, you could look at it that way. Maybe he was trying to be the leader, but like it was misplaced because he was saying the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely look at it either way, I guess. Yeah. So the colors. So we have a machloket of colors, so it's not so simple. But green is an interesting color. I don't totally understand. I mean, I don't understand it. It happens to be a kind of like a weird color when it comes to what Chazal say about it and secular sources, a big variety of ideas. But just what came to mind with this is that, you know, we said red, people usually associate with like energy and, you know, strong passion and stuff like that. And there is what to back that up with. So the thing is, there were early color studies. There's a guy named Faber Baron who like did really early like color experiments and stuff, and he had a lot of findings of, oh, red is stimulating and arousing and causes, you know, people and plants and all sorts of things to get worked up. But later on, two researchers, Patricia Valdez and Albert Morabian in 1994. Noticed that he and other whatever, I like a paper and all this color stuff and stuff.
Okay.
In case you're wondering, yeah, they pointed out that a lot of the earlier studies by him and other people, they only took into account the hue, the actual like color that they were working with, and they didn't pay attention to how bright it was or how strong of a color it was. So they said it only works out with red because everyone thinks red, you think it's a strong color, you bring it out in like a saturated version, and that's the kind they use in their experiments. But they kind of did a controlled study involving the brightness and strength of a color, and to see if really the color itself made a difference. And among other findings, they found that actually green was found to have more of an arousing effect on people. That maybe there's something about green itself also that is somewhat similar in terms of that like energy that comes along with it. And maybe that could be that these situations, it's kind of like a weaker leadership in terms of like his face pale, you know, like it's not this strong energy, but we do see that with Yehuda, at least in terms of Rabbeinu Bachai, who says it was green, that that it was the beginning of his steps in becoming a leader. If you want to make the, whatever, you know, take it or leave it, again, it's like my little theory.
Mm-hmm.
But but maybe there's a connection there. Whereas ultimately, as the king, the melech, that strong green is not even the color that's associated with the melech part, it's blue. And that's what brings us into the next Sheva, which is Yisachar, which basically most people agree is sapphire, which a lot of people say is like a blue sapphire. It comes, all these stones, they like come in different varieties, and so they can allow them to come in different colors. But people talk about this sapphire as being blue with Yisachar. Why? So, again, continuing with Rabbeinu Bachaye, in Source 12, he says, Yisachar al sapphire, v'hu nekra shefile, v'hu mara techele. He says straight out, it's blue. V'natna li Yisachar lefisha, hayu gedolim b'chachmat ha-Torah, sh'nemar v'bnei Yisachar yodei vina l'itim megomer. V'luchot ha-Torah shal snapphirinon hayu. V'chein matzinu b'matan Torah, v'tachar aglav k'masel v'nar ha-sapphire. V'yadua ki nefesh balei ha-Torah tzura b'tzura chayim tachak kisei ha-kavud. Shekatuv bo kemara even sapphire tzmut kisei. I'm going to pause there. So he says that, again, if you look in the bracha of Yisachar from in Vayechi, from Yaakov, everyone basically, you know, like the traditional interpretation is that Yisachar was the one who sat and learned Torah all the time. And we have these associations with the Torah and blue. Now, the Medrash says that the Luchot themselves were made of blue sapphire, and maybe since they're the Torah learners, that's why their stone was blue. And also, even more directly, that there's this idea that the nefashot, the neshamot of the people who are Balei Torah are like bound up underneath the Kisei HaKavod. And there's another pasuk that says that also under the Kisei HaKavod, Tachat Raglav, there's like this blue, like sapphire stone is also from Chumash, actually, that says that. So this is one interpretation of that, that like the people themselves of Talmidei Chachamim are like associated with the same place where there's a sapphire stone in metaphor and mystical stuff. So continuing on, the Rabbeinu Bachaye also talks about the color itself. He says, "V'tzeva zeh shel techelet einu tzeva shel ga'ava, k'tzeva shel admimut, o tzeva yirakot shekorin green, sheshneim tzvaim shel ga'ava, aval hatchelet tzeva shel anava, v'shvelut na'el lebechorim v'na'el lezakenim." So this is where I feel like I have the right to say my little thing about the psychological study, because what do the psychological studies say? If there is any connection between like stimulation and arousal and a hue, a specific color, either it's red or it's green. And that's exactly what he says. He's saying that blue is the opposite of these. Red and green, they're like gaivadika colors, whatever that means, but maybe that's what that means. And blue is exactly the opposite. Blue is like this calming, low-key color. It's like a cool color. People put it in their bathroom, so it's like nice and calm, you know, and it's good for like young people and older people, and like he just describes it, this calming color, and that the Torah is this like calm, beautiful, spiritual thing out there. It's not like the physical, you know, gashmish of the shtarka strength. It's like this calm, spiritual thing. And maybe it's possible that Yisachar was chosen even as the Sheva that's most appropriate to be learning Torah all the time, maybe because they had this characteristic. Maybe they were like calm nature, like low-key, quiet people, and so they are going to have the zitzvah to like sit and learn all day, and they're going to be able to connect to these spiritual things on a more regular basis. And also all the connection like with tzitzis, again, like the calming sea and like the sky. It's not like the growing active grass or like the red blood of nature. It's more the calming background parts of nature. And again, from my book, it's called The Secret Influence, Source 13, this guy Gerard, he ran a comprehensive and well-controlled study using red, blue, and white light and found statistical significance between the red and blue conditions for all physiological measures except heart rate. So, like, he measured different physiological responses when someone was under red light or blue light, like, you know, you can cover a light bulb with, like, a filter or something. So he measured responses under different colored light. And blood pressure was lower in the blue illumination than in the red, and yielded a lower respiration rate. People weren't breathing fast. It was like a slower, calmer breathing, and increased alpha wave frequency, which I'm not going to get into. And again, as a disclaimer, Gerard does caution the reader regarding the generalizability of these findings, because the study was conducted only on male college students, you know, not representative of the population. So, like, this colored psychology stuff is not so foolproof at all. But, like, we see there is some kind of connection, and interior designers use it, and, you know, psychologists use it, and it's just interesting how it does seem to be in sync with Torah sources. And maybe that's Yehuda as the king, that the king needs to be, as much as the king is the leader, what's the ideal Jewish king? The ideal Jewish king is just representative of Hashem, and he needs to be the ultimate Anav also. Like, Moshe was the greatest leader and the greatest Anav, the king has to be the greatest leader and the greatest Anav. So it's appropriate that his color should not be red or green, but the color representative of Yehuda would be blue, if you're going to focus on the Malchus aspect of it. So that is
interesting. There's a few things that, like, now we associate with different colors now, and like the parallels between, I guess, what was that? Like,
what do you mean?
Like, like red and green are Christmas colors. That would be when you categorize the two together, and like, you know, blue is coming, Jewish flag.
Like, oh, that's so funny.
Like,
well,
know, like,
in terms of the Jewish flag, I think it's definitely like it fits in very easily with like blue is the Torah color. So like, you know that. But
thanks.
In contrast, right?
And
it's
like,
interesting.
Okay, the American colors are red, white, and blue. But how they separate in terms of party, which party's which, Democratic, Republican.
Interesting.
Like,
and I think you could find a common thread between all those things.
Absolutely, and like also like which came first, the chicken or the egg? So like, Kadosh Baruch Hu created all these things, but Hashem chose to create the way that water appears to us as blue.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hashem chose to make our blood red. Hashem chose
right.
that like when our body physiologically like does stuff, the red rushes to our face. You know, when you're livid with anger. And so too, that kind of fits perfectly in line with the way the Shvatim work.
Right, and also just
cool.
even deeper than that, I only think that, I don't think it could only, I think maybe it could only apply like red and blue as like opposite extremes, but if you're going to go that route, then what, Hashem just chose arbitrary colors, like, let's make red the active color, like, and that'll be in people's blood, and that'll be all these things, let's make blue, why is that? It like I just think it's interesting that if you look at really, really the bottom line science of the colors, what are colors? They're frequencies. And it happens to be, and frequencies are like one of those things that's like light, you know, like light rays, what is that? It's somewhere between gashmius and ruchnius, you might say. And it happens to be that when you look at like the waves, you know, on a chart, the blue, the waves from that like that bring blue to our eyes are the smallest ones. They're like quick and small. And the red waves are like larger and like wider. And red is like the more gashmi kind of one. And blue is like the more ruchni, like a little more distance from gashmi. So I don't know. Interesting things. So away from the colors, now on to white. Source 14, the next shade that I want to talk about is Zvulun. And Zvulun, Rabbeinu Bachai says, Zvulun al Yahalom, who on a crap pearla, maybe he's talking about like a pearl, perhaps, who levana kala, it's completely white kind of stone. Al Shem Shah Kesef Lavan, who Siman la Ashro shal Zvulun, Shnamar Zvulun lachof yamim ishkon. Lachach nitna lizvulun vihi mitzlacha bepragmatia. So, apparently, maybe in those days they had like white money. Something about money is similar to white, he says. And it's representative of his wealth. Because what Zvulun, everyone knows, he was the sailor, he was the businessman, he made the money, he supported Yisachar, and so he was very wealthy. And he was involved in these like practical, pragmatic parts of life. He was like out there doing the business, making the money. And there's some connection with this white stone to the like, very like worldly endeavors that he was involved in. Midrash Rabbah and Tiferet Zion focused on a different aspect of it. It also says, they also say that his flag and his stone were white. And again, there's the image of a ship on the flag, same idea. But Tiferet Zion says more. Zvulun's portion of Eretz Israel was near the seashore. With the profits from his sea voyages, these tribesmen supported the Torah studying tribe of Yisachar. The color white symbolized their happiness and kind motives in conducting their business. They undertook their journeys in the happy conviction that Hashem would grant them success because they used their money for maintaining Torah. So he's focusing not on the like gashmi like money making, you know, business dealing guy. He's focusing on like almost layer deeper than that. What's the white? The white is that they were so happy, they were so like altruistic to not make money only for themselves, but to be giving it to Yisachar, that's what it's representative of. And something about like white is like a pure color. They had pure motives in doing this. It's not, don't just say it's because of the money and the merchantry. There's another source, Bamidbar Rabbah says it's the color of a merchant's chair, white. So that's why his stone was white. Like, it's not just the business part of it, it's his pure intentions. And not just that he was giving to Yisachar, but also even within himself, it like emphasizes means of emuna, that in dealing with business, he had total trust in Hashem that like he would take care of it and it would work out. Because he's using it for the right things, and Hashem is in charge. And again, I think it's interesting the color connection, because what's white? How do we get this white that we see? The light, usually most colors, right? All the light waves, they come down, and like certain waves reflect back, and that makes the unique color that we see. But in white, they all reflect back. That's why it's white. And that's kind of what he's saying. White is like an altruistic color. He was giving. He didn't go into business for himself because he wanted to like make all the money and be rich. Like, no, he did it because he wanted to give. And also emuna, like it's this, that same pure color represents his emuna. And so you could look at it either way. In the same like mida, it's funny, when I was preparing this, I thought it's kind of like, to use Richard Joel's lashon, and it's like he's the enabler. Like, that's his mida, you know, like enable and ennoble. He's the one, he's not doing it for himself. He's not just the person who's in the job, and that's my job, and that's what I do, and I'm in the prominent position, etc. He's like the enabler. He does it for Yisachar. He does it because he's developing connection to Hashem through it. It's not for the material stuff itself. And white is kind of like a blank color also. It's not filled up with stuff. It's just like, it's a blank, and you can put things on it, you know, and then you can see the other things. It's like a blank slate. That you can use for something, and that's what materialism in Judaism believes is for, not for itself, but for something greater. And just the last shevet that I wanted to mention is Naphtali, actually, which there's not so much about either, but again, it's kind of like a little bit of a thesis or theory or whatever you want to call it, agree or disagree as you like. Naphtali, according to Bamidbar Rabbah, was the stone Achlama. You can, like, with all these things, you can refer back to second source with, like, the list of them and where it falls out. I think I was trying to choose a poster, and, like, all the ones that came up, I'm like, no, that's wrong. That's not what color that shit, like, that color in the row was. So, like, I didn't want to put up one that was wrong. So this one was, like, the closest you could get. I don't think it's exact. Like, I was a little confused by some of it. I was like, I'm not sure what that's supposed to be. But for the most part, it's actually Antarctic. And also, like, all that jewelry they sell, like, all right. I don't know. Maybe there are other sources I haven't found. Also, could be. But so, according to B'min Barabar, Naphtali was Achlama. V'tzeva mampasha lo domeh l'yayin salul. She'ein admato azza. So again, the stone, the Achlama, is the same color as the flag, the mapa. And the color, it's similar to like a clear wine whose redness is not so strong in it. So like, what does that mean? Like, well, it must be a dark wine, right? It can't be talking about white wine, because that has nothing to do with redness. If you're talking about it, it's not so strong, so it must be like a red wine, but it's kind of like a clear type of wine. Maybe it's a little purplish. It's not so red. It's kind of purplish wine. Sometimes there's like a deep sweet wine that's kind of purplish. So maybe that's what it's talking about. And then on it, you know, on the flag, it had Alav Ayalal, Shem Naphtali Ayalal Shlucha. That's just the rest of the part in the Medrash. But really, what's that supposed to tell us? The Medrash doesn't expound on it. I didn't find anything in most sources about what that has anything to do with Naphtali, except for this great Tiferet Tzion, which I couldn't find inside. So the Midrash says, the reddish-purple color hints at Torah, which is compared to wine. Rows of Torah students from this tribe sat and studied Torah from the mouth of the Sanhedrin. Okay, so at least we have some connection with like the color and the wine thing, but what Midah is that supposed to be? Like, what are we supposed to get at? Again, it could be there are billions, like, every person is so complex and there's lots of aspects to them, and obviously we're not trying to boil down the Shvadim to, like, one thing, but if we're trying to glean lessons and learn about different types of Midah, that could be used in different ways, so what can we get out of this about Naphtali? So what I was thinking is that, what elements do we have here? We have this, like, purple element. It's kind of reddish, but it's not so much. It's kind of clear. It's kind of purple or whatever. It's kind of like a mixed kind of color. And they were the students who sat and learned from the Sanhedrin. So what's purple? Purple is made of blue and red. So red is this like gashmi, blood-like, you know, worldly color in its associations. And blue in its associations is this like heavenly, ruchni kind of color, right? And purple is kind of the mix of them. And what did Naphtali do? Naphtali was not the kolnik. He was not Yisachar sitting and learning all day. Naphtali was not the leader. He was not the teachers and the, you know, the king or the president or the, you know, prime minister necessarily. And he apparently wasn't the Sanhedrin itself. It was the students who learned from the Sanhedrin. They sat, the Torah students, they sat and they learned from the mouth of the Sanhedrin. So like we see they have this Torah connection, but like they're not the source of this fourth, you know, outpouring of Torah either. They're like in between. It's like this purplish thing, a little blue, a little red, you know, and they're the guys who are like going to work and having their daf yomi shear on the train, you know, like this is the person, this is like the persona, at least what I got from these two little sources about Naphtali, that like it's a different kind of midah, you know, they're not like Zvulun, maybe they never had time to learn Torah, that's okay, that was their job, they were out on the seas, like you gotta focus on the ocean if you want to get, you know, into rapids or whatever. Like, maybe they didn't really learn Torah so much. They didn't have CDs back then and iPods and, like, downloads to listen to while they were out on the sea. Like, whatever. They just did it without it. And that was their job. They were just enabling other people to do it. And Yisachar is the other extreme, we know. But, like, Naphtali's at home. Like, they're in the middle. And so that's, like, the last, I kind of thought, that's, like, the Torah Mata Shevet, you know? But you also have the Kolel Shevet. Like, we're one Am. And this is the whole thing that I'm getting from all these Shvatim, that I guess it's sort of like a modern idea of, like, pluralism, and everyone's an individual and has their strength and whatever. And so, you know, like, maybe the people don't used to think in those terms, but I think there's something we can glean from the values of our culture and the generation we live in this society, of really realizing, like, every Shevet has their path in the Yom Tov. Like, yes, we're all crossing the Yom Tov at the same time. Yes, there's one Choshen, and the Aaron goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and, like, the Avins for the whole Am is one. But the only way that that's really complete is if each person's in their right path. And if the passionate energy people know how to use their passion in the right way, and use it to, like, get kids excited about Torah, or, like, you know, run the tzedakah relay races, or I don't know what, you know, like, or if the leadership people realize that they have to take a stand and be leaders when they have a good idea, and they shouldn't, like, be too hesitant. If they have the potential to be in charge and to, like, organize things, then they should do it. It's the Yehuda characters. And the Yisachar is, like, if you're not as energetic and you're kind of calm, you know, the danger in that, like I mentioned in the Shiran Simcha, is that Simcha is more of an energetic kind of thing a lot of times, at least in a certain perspective of it. Like, Simcha's bread, Me'ashi Loach says. And a lot of times it's easier maybe to be happy if you're, like, dancing around and jumping up and down. But, like, what if you're not into that? You're just, like, a calm, low-key person. So there's a calm kind of happiness, but there's also, like, you know, quietness, and being low-key could sometimes be a danger into whatever, laziness or sadness or something. But, like, no, you still have to use it to sit and learn. And people, you know, can realize, like, maybe the person should be doing research for cancer, you know, for a cure for cancer, whatever, something that they can, like, focus on and use that calm, focused ability. And then Zvulun, maybe you're the businessman, but it's a means, it's not the ends. And to help other people and develop emunah and, like, see in the right perspective is a different kind of person. And the Naphtali of being in the middle and kind of, like, using both and taking from where, listening to the Shirim while you're, you know, on your way to work, or, like, you know, involving the Torah and mitzvot in one's own life when they're doing things. Oh, I also wanted to mention with the Zvulun, like, sometimes there comes a point, especially women, where, like, maybe women, like, a woman who just had a baby is going to be home more and not going to be able to go to her job and be, like, the business person who that's a real personality, or, like, out there as, like, the red, as the leader, Yehuda, whatever. Sometimes a woman dafka needs to be the Zvulun, not in the sense of the businessman part, but in the sense of, like, enabling, because maybe they're home part of the time, enabling the kids or the husband or whatever. And, like, even within one person's life, there are different stages that these different characters, you know, traits can come out. So I just thought it was kind of cool. Like, after, like, I gave a couple of shiurim about specific midot, it kind of just all comes together to remind ourselves that, well, maybe one person has more of an inclination towards one midot or the other, and we need to be in tune to that to really be able to channel our abilities for the best thing, so that we could have one big shlemistika klal yisrael. So.
Yeah, thank you. Very creative.